So to get into why we're here this morning, grid computing has penetrated well beyond the large research institutions that develop the techniques required to virtualize computing resources and has entered the early adoption phase in major enterprises. According to Insight Research Corp, worldwide grid spending will grow from $1.8 billion in 2006 to approximately $25 billion in 2011. The vast majority of grid computing, of course, is built on Linux. So we felt that was an important technology for us to look at Linux World. As grid technology becomes more pervasive in everyday IT, this topic becomes a higher priority for all IT managers, CIOs, and staff. Richard will address current challenges and business solutions for grid computing with an eye toward current and future trends. Briefly, Richard Wirt is Vice President, Intel Senior Fellow, and General Manager of Intel Corporation Software and Solutions Group. In this position, Wirt is responsible for enabling Intel architecture products through ISV enabling, solutions enabling, core system software enabling, and providing leading-edge products such as compilers, libraries, and tools that allow customers to get the full performance benefit of Intel architectures. Wirt serves on the Open Source Development Lab board and is the Intel representative on the board of directors of the Enterprise Grid Alliance. And now please join me in welcoming Mr. Richard Wirt.
I remember
when you had to be at a computer to get an email.
When you played music on CDs.
I remember when video conferencing had that weird delay.
I remember when laptops weighed 4 pounds.
I remember when you had to go to a theater to see a first-run movie.
Airplanes didn't have broadband.
TVs sat on the floor.
I remember when you couldn't make a movie on a cell phone.
I remember hotspots.
I remember putting film in the camera.
I remember paying cash.
I remember when you had to buy your music at the store.
I remember dial-up.
I remember
when my dad worked in a place called an office.
I remember asking for directions.
I remember single core.
What was once normal is now history.
I'm glad it's now and not then.
We like it when you change the world.
Thank you. How many of you are working in an enterprise or a corporation that's using Linux today in your mainstream for mission-critical apps? Raise your hands. Okay, very good. Ankit shows that today Linux has matured, number of people are using it, and it's more than just about the operating system today. A lot of it now, of the emphasis of the community, the emphasis of standards organization, is shifting away from just the operating system kernel to a lot of the services and value that can be built around that. Today I want to talk about what we call the virtual enterprise, sometimes known also as the Grid 2.0, give you a little bit of an understanding of what it means, standards forms, the state of the capability, and then we also have two companies that will be joining me on stage to talk a little bit about their products that they're supplying into this market, as well as give you a demo. There are several forces that are driving this virtual enterprise today. One, the business environment is changing rapidly. Open source is becoming predominantly used in the enterprise, mission critical, as you already have signified, as well as other value around that is being built. A lot of community projects, all the way from policy engines to security to other features, provisioning, manageability, all of these are beginning to change. The other thing is, and this is now a significant part of the $200 billion plus spent annually on software. The other change is the business process. Many of you work in an environment that is now mobile. In fact, I was talking to an IBMer a while back. He said the IBM used to stand for, I've been moved. Now it stands for I'm by myself. Some 40% of their global workforce is working mobile, but many of us are. You work on airplanes, you travel worldwide, you've got part of your company stretched worldwide, and you have to work in a distributed way across that environment. The other advance is technology advances. When Intel brought out the first microprocessor in 1971, basically the 4004, that would do about 60,000 instructions in a second. Today, our latest processors are well over 10 billion instructions in a second. You're able to build a node in a cluster that's capable of doing hundreds of thousands of transactions a second. And so the technology is advanced. Not only is it the CPU that is advanced in performance, a lot of the capabilities added into the CPU have advanced. For example, our latest processors, as well as our competitors, have hardware support for virtualization. You're able to run multiple operating systems on the same CPU. So these are some of the capabilities that are changing this environment and changing it fairly quickly. So what I want to do is look at what this evolution is. Most of you think of the grid as an aggregation of compute processing to run bigger parallel jobs. In fact, a lot of it came out of universities, national labs, and still that's being done. More and more, though, the shift of the grid is focused towards a service-oriented architecture that's basically a basis for utility computing, and you can build services on top of that. One of the key events that changed that was back about 3 years ago when the Global Grid Forum made a change. Their change was from hierarchical APIs, sort of building layers of APIs, to a service-based approach in trying to define the capability of the grid and what they were doing. That shift really opened the door for services to come in and play a lot stronger role in forming the grid. Virtualization, as I talked about, the hardware support has done a lot. But not only do we have hardware support for virtualization, most of the systems now you buy have out-of-band support for management. So there's low-level out-of-band support where a microcontroller is monitoring the system, feeding back out-of-band information about that system as it operates. This allows the system to be rebooted or provisioned automatically. So this is a major change that's opened the door for this. Today, a grid is defined around a set of attributes. Group 451 has coined the term grid 2.0. It's a term that we like to use. Also, basically it means what we mean by virtual enterprise. Some of those attributes is you take advantage of virtualizing the CPU, but also the storage, the network, and data. Service-oriented, as I indicated, with the change in the direction of the Global Grid Forum. Another important factor is it's really business policies and business workflows that are driving policy down through that whole grid. That's an important aspect. Typically spans within your company and across companies. Most companies are dealing very broadly across companies. In fact, it's said that some 18% of the global GPD was inter-nation commerce back in 1990, and that's shifting to about 30% by the year 2015. So you see this change is driving the need for a lot more service-type capability interacting between companies as well as within your company. This picture virtualizes the enterprise and shows you a representation of what we think it is. I want you to notice the three horizontal layers. We'll talk about each of these layers. The bottom layer is basically what we refer to as utility computing. It's automating that cluster or sets of clusters which may even be heterogeneous in their architecture, as well as distributed within your corporation. The middle layer then is that service layer that's emerging. A lot of that started from the app server world and has grown from that infrastructure now to a much more service-oriented, policy-driven activation of those services with guarantee of service, quality of service. And then the top layer is actually the business flow. We'll talk about each of these within a company. Perhaps the most important part, though, are not the horizontal layers, but the vertical layers that you see there. And this is the place where the industry is really working together to standardize. Each of those layers then have pieces of these vertical layers. You've got management that goes all the way through. You've got policies. The policies of the top layer need to be driven all the way down to the policies that allocate and provision hardware. And then you've got security. Security is an area that I think all of us are very aware of. Its importance, but it's an area that as you do intercompany commerce, it takes on a new meaning. Because IP is frequently exchanged in this, and how that IP is handled is a big issue. Another thing that drives part of this is privacy. As companies begin collecting information about the individual, a lot of that you want to be private. And so you want a trust system where your identity may not be shown to who's using your service, but they collect information about the sales records or how much information you use. So this is the big picture. Let me dive into that we know as Grid 2.0. Let me dive down into some of the layers. As I mentioned, the bottom layer is basically a utility computing layer. I think the difference that's emerging here is with virtualization, you have a lot more independence between the hardware and the applications that run on it. In fact, this layer can be thought of as a set of computers. Typically, those are blades or 1U systems. They typically are Intel Xeons or our competitors' products, dual core, dual processors within each of those, dual core and then dual processors and then dual core within each of those, and capable of running hundreds of thousands of transactions per minute or per second. So this is the bottom framework. This framework typically has an internet connection on each node, as well as an Ethernet or InfiniBand connection between the nodes. So we typically think of it as a cluster, or it could be a series of clusters connected together. It doesn't really matter. And then across that are the vertical layers that we talked about. So some of the capabilities of this bottom layer that are important, one is a dynamic resource allocation. You think of this as provisioning. When I get a request from your business to run a certain application, I have to find a resource, and that's done through a management system. And in fact, it's a management system that's typically a discovery and configure automatically. And there's a number of standards in this area that's helped with that. Once you find a system, then you have to allocate a container to that system, or you can think of a container as being an operating system in the environment that's going to run that application. And then you let it run. Now, part of the problem here is during the course, you may need to fail over because of a failure. You need to do load balancing because of one system could be the bottleneck for the entire application. And so you split it across multiple systems. You need typically to do transformation on your data. Some of that will be up at the higher layers. Some of it may be down at the lower levels. Security and audit become very important to know who has access to what. Authentication, authorization, and then access controls. So much of this now is being built down at the lower level where you virtualize the environment. Some of it's still at the operating system level, but it's a set of services for these that work together all the way top to bottom. Big area here is a service level agreement. So as you run this, you want to be guaranteed that the service will run and that you get your results. Another important thing is power. 5 years ago, we didn't worry about power. We basically designed the fastest CPU we could design. You know, we were tracking Moore's law. It said crank the frequency. Well, part of the problem there is you use more power as the frequency goes up and more transistors are on a chip. So Intel, along with our competitors, have put a lot of focus in the last several years of bringing the power requirements down. And you'll see our latest processors are about 40% less power than the generation before them and 40% more performance. So that's an example of what's going on here from a CPU point of view. But you not only want to regulate that power and drive it down in the CPU, you want to be able to make sure you don't overload your cluster as you're running. So you need to be able to assign jobs to the right CPU, as well as control power, turn them off at night, power them down to a low power state when they're not running a job, and then bring them back up instantly to continue. So there's a lot of aspects to this utility computing layer. Now, one of the things that we've seen is we've seen the open source community begin to grow companies and innovation around open source to fill some of these needs. In fact, here's a list of some of the companies providing support as well as products. Some of these products are proprietary. Many of them are built off of open source. All of them, I believe, run on Linux as well as some of the other Unixes. And even some of them run on top of Windows. You will see that companies like the OSVs, whether it's Novell or Red Hat, are beginning to integrate these and these services, bundle them integrated with the OS when they distribute Linux. So this is happening today in virtualization. The Xen source now has gone out. Xen itself is in distributions of Linux, as well as Xen source is supporting customers independently with it. A number of other companies are taking that capability and building upon it. So the virtualization has gone to the point now there's hardware support. You can run multiple copies of operating systems as well as different operating systems unchanged on that support from Intel. Likewise, a lot of hardware now is coming into security. We've provided LT, and we also have TPM as well. A number of vendors are providing building standard in these nodes support for security. I wanted to look a little bit at virtualization and its value. I think one of the things that all of you are concerned about is reducing the total cost of ownership of those systems. Frequently, you have systems that may only be utilized 10%, 15% of the time. A lot of this is because the performance of the system has outpaced the new releases that you make of your software, and so the system sits there unused. Virtualization, as the first box indicated, allows you to consolidate multiple servers, run those applications in what we think of as a container, where the OS is part of what runs in that container with your application. The advantage of this is you still have security between multiple applications, much like you had on independent servers, but now you can load up that server so it may be used 80% of the time effectively. So that's one value. The other value relates to bringing online new development. Now, frequently in the past, you had a dedicated server, you did your development around, you did your prototyping, your beta site may have been on it, and then you had to move it into production, which meant you bought another server just like the one you did development on, and you had to tie it into the disk system and your data stores and all of that and build it. The virtualization, we're seeing now the capability of actually in a container, run your applications. Security is around it, so if it dies or crashes, You don't bring down the entire system. You only bring down that virtual machine. You can develop your application, and then quickly you can bring it online, because effectively that container now is allocated over to a CPU that's running in production. Disaster recovery is much the same. Those containers can automatically fail over in a matter of seconds or milliseconds in some case, and be running at another data center in another location, and you preserve that. So these are some of the advantages of virtualization that we're seeing in the market. I'd like to invite Bill Coleman, the CEO of Kasat. You may know Bill as the B in BEA, to come out and tell us a little about his products that he's providing into this utility computing layer. Bill? Welcome, Bill.
Great. Thank you very much, Richard. Welcome, and thank you all for attending this morning. It's my responsibility to show you that this can really be done, and real customers are doing it today. Our product, Collage, is an example of that. First, let me talk to you about how we get to this virtual enterprise and what the steps are. I mean, it is based on virtualization. Today, we're talking about physical hardware virtualization, which is a reality. VMware set the precedent, and Zen 3.0 is really moving forward, especially with its para-virtualization, the ability to directly address the hardware and poke right through for the device drivers. And with the newest VT technology from Intel, having the ability to support that in the chip. But that gives you the ability to increase your server utilization, obviously, and save a lot of money. The next step really is automation. And what we're trying to do here is reduce the OPEX costs, which of course are approaching 70% of overall IT lifecycle costs. And they're going up dramatically along the way. Today, the leaders there are people like IBM with their Tivoli software, Symantec with their Veritas Foundation series, and of course, Opsware. But finally, as Richard mentioned, we have to get to utility computing. We have to get to turning the entire physical infrastructure of a data center into a service-oriented infrastructure. That is the mirror requirement to make service-oriented applications really work, to be able to respond to the dynamics, which I'll talk about, in an operational environment. And to do it based on the business policies, what you're trying to achieve with your data center. And of course, obviously, save a lot of money at the same time. Now, first, why are customers doing this? I just want to briefly talk about three of our customers. First, Pfizer, of course, the largest pharmaceutical company in the world. Pfizer is about 5 years into their 10-year SOA transition. And they found a few years ago that they were approaching 600 to 700 applications had been moved into the environment, mostly based on my previous company, WebLogic, and our good friendly partner from up in Washington, Microsoft. But what they found, of course, is these were becoming increasingly more expensive and lower utilization, well below 10% average utilization on thousands of servers. By adopting what they call smart infrastructure, which I'll end this talk by talking about, they were able to dramatically increase that. I'll come back to their results in a moment. Another customer is JFCOM, Joint Forces Command. Now, this is the joint command that actually runs all operations that the Department of Defense, United States Department of Defense, does worldwide. You know, wars, actions, etc. They developed over a period of years the ability to actually simulate those. It's five-dimensional warfare, right? You've got to simulate and figure out how to coordinate command and control over land, sea, air, space, and cyberspace. The problem is it literally took weeks to set up one simulation. But by turning it into a utility and automating the dynamic provisioning in a goal-oriented way, they can literally do it in hours. It's a dramatic change in their business objective, obviously. Finally, it's a financial services institution that will not be named at this moment. What they were finding, of course, was the load requirements, the requirements for their different services of stock trading and loans, et cetera, change dynamically during the day, and they wanted to be able to keep the service levels balanced and utilize the system, but also power was their second most expensive thing. So by dynamically being able to not only change the service levels, but to turn servers on and off within a matter of minutes, literally 2 to 4 minutes, they could profile power utilization as well as service levels and maintain those costs. Just some examples of real live customers that are using it today. So let's go back and talk about what the basis of utility computing is. There's three elements that are important. First, of course, is virtualization control. Now we're talking about virtualization in two dimensions, not one dimension. The first is the physical virtualization. We don't do that. We work with partners. We announced our partnership with VMware back in March, in which we OEM their product incorporated. It gives great scale-up capability, but you also need scale-out and to create service-level policies across that. The second, and most important for utility computing side of it, as opposed to the utilization side of it, is the ability to virtualize the application workflow. And I'll talk about that more in a minute. But that's the key, to separate the application flow and dynamics from the actual physical entity of the data center. The second is to do it on a policy basis. So it's goal-driven based on your operations policies. If you think of service-oriented infrastructure, it's changing how your application works for the mission of your business. The utility should be dynamically profiling that based on the operational requirements, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But the result is what we call service-level automation. Service-level automation, basically, is what I'll talk about here, is the goal of utility computing. And more than that, it's the goal of having IT in an organization. It's the ability to cost-effectively and dynamically deliver the application workflow at required service levels. Why did I say application workflow? It's because no single application actually can do anything for you as a business. For example, you want to process an order. It probably has to have a whole bunch of applications. The first one it may hit is Apache, then Checkpoint, WebLogic, go back, check your inventory in SAP, over to a couple of Oracle databases, and then back through the front, and you're actually delivering an order. If you don't balance the whole policy on the quantity, quality, responsiveness of that whole dynamic, you're actually not delivering services. And that's what this is about. Service-level automation is the basis for utility computing. Now, this is a diagram that represents what Gartner calls this real-time infrastructure, and it talks about the dynamics. There are three dynamics that you're having to balance. The first is, what are the policies that I'm setting for how my business works? I want to make sure I process every order up to the last second of the quarter and give it whatever priority I need to. 1 second later, I can slow down my orders like crazy because I want to now close the books and bill everybody. Those are dynamic policies, and that's how you have to manage these kind of environments. You can do it today. But you're doing it by also balancing the demand flow that's happening through your data center with the resources available to actually generate those application workflows. And the end result is what we call service level automation. And that's the ability to deliver guaranteed quantity and quality of application service flow as effectively and cost-efficiently as possible, and only limited by the total capacity of the data center. So the elements are very simple. One, you have to decouple the application services from the data center itself. You do that by your policy and object management infrastructures. Two, you have to automate the delivery of that by optimizing those dynamics I talked about, the three dynamics. The goal, the data center capacity, business goals, data center capacities, and demand flow. You know, and third, you basically result turning your total data center into something that is agile that can dramatically lower your OPEX and CAPEX costs. What this software does is literally turn your data center into a utility that can be shared, that is self-optimizing, self-configuring, and self-healing. And it does it with no changes to the applications, the operating system, the hardware, the system management, or provisioning. We don't put one line of code on your server. This is a governor, as we call it, Cassatt collage, that manages this. And it manages it through what we call the measure, analyze, response cycle. It's a very simple cycle, but it's the key, and particularly the response side, dynamically to application service flows. First, on the measure side, we're constantly monitoring and analyzing the physical capacity as servers come online or as they fail, as more capacity is there. We're monitoring the demand flow that's coming in and the service levels that are being generated. Now, we analyze that against the policies you've set, but not just the policies, also the priorities, because if your capacity is less than the demand at any particular time, you better move it to the highest priority to meet those policies. Maybe changing the whole VLAN structure such that you're putting less capacity towards your software test environment and moving that inside the firewall dynamically to actually generate the trades or whatever it is if you're doing stock analysis, for example. And then, of course, measuring it against the goals you're trying to achieve. Any changes in that environment have to be responded to by dynamically reprofiling what application flows are being generated. And these are at all levels in every combination. The application running on operating system, the services running on web app servers, and the virtual machines running on virtual machine managers, and in every combination to make that workflow work. So basically, how does it work? It's kind of very simple. We take that response cycle, our governor is constantly monitoring the data center itself, what the capacities are, what's running. It's constantly changing the profile of what application flows are being generated. On top of it, literally, in bringing a server up from cold start in as little as 2 minutes or changing an application flow in milliseconds. And then working that back through your policies, your auditing systems, your utility billing systems and your compliance systems to continue to optimize that whole flow. So that's what this is about. I told you I'd talk about Pfizer. Pfizer's our flagship example, the largest pharmaceutical in the world, over $50 billion. They ran into this problem, obviously under 10% utilization. They came up with this concept of what they call smart infrastructure. Turn it into a utility, and basically run it dynamically, raising the utilization from 10% to an average of 50%. In the pilot we did a year ago, it was only 37 applications on 60 servers. Their analysis was it was about a $5 million savings. In the 1,000 server rollout, 600 application we're doing right now, it's about a $100 million savings. So these things are happening right now. This, by the way, is on Lintel servers. They're basically dual processor systems, and it's a scale-out application. The more capability they need, just roll in another blade server, attach it to the network, it's discovered, powered on, inventory, and use. So this is real, it's happening now, and this scale-out architecture that Intel is enabling, especially with VT enabled right into the chip, is making it possible. Thank you very much. And if any questions...
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. It's great.